it is that most wonderful time of the day when we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, the food maverick, the food maven, the food master, and now added to that, the food dude and the food guy, because I like the food guy.
The food guy, too.
All right, so we're food guy and
you know, I don't know, dude is a little too youthful for me. Dudes, to me, are under 30.
Okay.
But not necessarily. Anyway, I'm obsessed this week with pears. I have finally, late in life, discovered how to tell if a pear is ripe. Now, let me exclude Bartlett pears, which I think are the most popular pear in the country, and because they turn yellow when they get ripe. By the way, pears ripen off the tree. So if you find a pear that is ripe, you know it's been around for a while, and off the tree, meaning, and it probably got bruised along the way. So I always like to pick out unripe pears and then let them ripen on my countertop, including Bartlett's, which, as I say, will turn yellow when they're... there are red Bartlett's, and those you have to determine their ripeness the same way you do the other pears, which, and the others are Bosc, which is that russet-colored pear with the long tapering neck. Don't know how to better describe it. Comus, which are rather round. They don't have a neck. They're green. I have to say, Comus are among my favorite, not among, they're my favorite pear. But so whenever I see Comus, and they look good, meaning not bruised,
right?
I buy some. And again, leave them on the counter. Sometimes it takes as long as 3 days, but I'll get to ripening in a second. And then there's the Anjou pear. Now, I don't know why this is, but Bosc, Bartlett, Comus, and Anjou are all French pears. Did you ever realize that? Anjou should be a giveaway. It's funny about Comus because they have them in Italy and they call them Comice, pronouncing the word Italian. So I never dawned on me that they were actually French. The Bartlett pear, the one that turns yellow when it's ripe, is the William pear, as in Poire William. Don't ask me to pronounce it correctly in French. My French pronunciation is from Hungary. Yes. But anyway, it's the pear, the William pear, which the famous spirit is made.
Right. And so can we talk now about how the pear gets in the bottle?
Well, it gets in the bottle because it grows in the bottle.
Correct.
yeah, they do sell. At this point, I think it's just a novelty item. You don't have to have the pear in the bottle for it to be good, Poor William. But there is a novelty version where there's a pear inside the bottle, and you figure, how could they do that? Well, they suspend the bottles on branches that have just started forming the fruit, meaning, I guess, right after they blossom. And the fruit grows inside the glass bottle. And then it's topped off with a distillate of a pear, so to speak. It's a spirit. Anyway, I like it. It's very good. It's very fragrant, as are Bartlett pears. And they're the pears, in fact, that go into cans. And I have a thing for canned fruit because, of course, you love anything you grew up with, and I grew up eating canned fruit. I also grew up eating a lot of different fruit, and thinking about this, why my, let's say, Yiddish household, although we didn't speak Yiddish and we didn't keep kosher, but we had kosher food ways, kosher style, as they call it today, and we had a lot of fruit desserts because, of course, you can't mix meat and dairy at the same meal. So you can't have a steak and then ice cream. But you can have fruit because fruit goes every which way. It's neither dairy nor meat. And so you can eat it with anything. It's the word in Yiddish is parv or parva. What do you say, Jill?
I've never known how. I only recently figured out what that word meant, so I didn't know whether it was parev, pariv, parave.
I don't know. I say parev because it's spelled that way, but other people, you know, people Yiddish speakers say different things. There are a lot of different dialects of Yiddish too. So anyway, my grandmother, Elsie Sonkin, made poached pears all the time. All winter, we had poached pears, and into the spring, too, because it was a big dessert at Passover. And she would poach her pears in sweet kosher wine, you know, made upstate New York. Not necessarily Concord wine. There are other varieties of grape used for kosher wine. It's the sweet wine. And so we always had these, and they were beautiful color, ruby-colored pears. And I have a recipe for that in my book, Jewish Home Cooking. The other thing that she used to make was dried fruit compote. And we always had a jar of dried fruit compote in the refrigerator. I say we because my grandmother lived downstairs. And her refrigerator was like our refrigerator upstairs. I mean, I could go into it at will and get myself a little dish full of stewed fruits. Now, I love stewed fruits. However, for those of you who are diabetic out there, it's like the worst thing you can eat. It's like pure sugar. In fact, you actually add sugar to the water you're going to cook the fruit in, so it's even the syrup is super sweet. You can make it without added sugar, but it's not as good. And here, I'm going to tell you how to make, because this is really easy and really wonderful to keep around in the refrigerator, and it lasts for weeks. I buy these packets of mixed dried fruit. I think they're about a pound per package, and they contain mostly, I have to say, prunes, dried apricots, a few slices of dried apple or pear, maybe a couple other things, but nothing exotic like cherries or pineapple or any of that. It's all very, I don't know how to describe it, but it's everyday dried fruits. And to that, I might add, by the way, for a couple of pounds of that, I would easily throw in a pound of dried apricots, because I love the apricots, or dried prunes. I was telling somebody about a friend the other day about I was going to make fruit compote, but I had to be sure I had the willpower to ration it for myself. And she said, oh, I grew up in a house where there was always a bottle of prune juice in the refrigerator. And that brought back a memory, too, because I guess we always had prune juice because it's a laxative. And, you know, especially older people like me get obsessed with regularity. So we have, and also, it's very healthy, as we know, to eat a lot of fiber. And basically, pears are a source of fiber. They don't have the nutrition profile of apples, which are a little better. But they do have, I don't know, about 3 grams of fiber per pear, which is not bad. It's a nice amount. You should get about 25 grams the whole day. So back to the compote. So you put the fruit in a pot. Basically, two or three pounds of dried fruits. Cover it with water and add sugar. Now, I add as much as a whole cup of sugar, but you don't have to add that much. A half a cup is actually enough. And what I do is, like my grandmother, I would take all these fruits and put them in a big bowl, cover them with water and a big slice of lemon, and let them sit overnight. And then the next morning, put them on top of the stove in a pot, big pot, and maybe you need to top it off with a little bit more liquid, and then you add your sugar. And then you can add the juice of the rest of the lemon after you've cut out one big slice. And you can still keep the slice in there because actually the peel is good for the compote too. And bring it to a simmer. And then it doesn't really take very long, maybe 15 minutes. And you'll see the fruits will all plump up. And then let them sit there, of course, in the in the liquid until it cools to room temperature, and at that point, taste the syrup. If it needs another kick of lemon, you can put that in. I doubt that it would need any more sugar. Get used to whatever sugar amount is in there, and as I said, you can do this even without any added sugar. So that's my compote, and keep it in a jar in the fridge. It lasts for weeks. I haven't tried years or months, but I know it lasts for weeks. I don't make it in such a large quantity that it won't disappear in at least 3 or 4 weeks. Now, as for the poached pears, I made some this week. I happen to have a almost full, not quite, bottle of Ruby Port, which I bought to drink and then decided it was not for me. It was too sweet. It brought back some memories, though. When I first went to France in the early 70s, the thing was, and of course, being a kid myself and not knowing any better, I thought it was a traditional thing, but it's not. Everybody was drinking Ruby Port before a meal, and as an aperitif. And I thought, oh, that's a nice idea a number of months ago, but I didn't like it. It was too sweet for me, certainly as an aperitif. Anyway, it doesn't have the bitter edge that I like my aperitif to have either. So I had this bottle of Ruby Port, and I thought, let's make some poached pears in port. That's a thing, by the way, pears in port. And what I did was I had literally 3 cups of port, a cup of sugar, a big cinnamon stick, about 6-inch cinnamon stick. I broke it in half. And I don't know, just to be a little exotic today, I added a star anise. Brought that to a boil, let the sugar dissolve, and then I had 4 ripe but firm Bosque pears. You peel the pears from stem to bottom. However, leave the stems on. It's just for attractiveness, but you're not going to core the pears. You can core them as you eat them. I mean, they slice very nicely in the end. So I put the 4 pears, peeled, still with stems, into my wine. Now, I had to choose a pot where these 4 pears could all lay beautifully, nicely, and on their sides. I have tried innumerable times to cook these pears standing up, even with putting a slice off at the bottom so that they have a flat end. They still won't stand because your liquid should be so copious around these pears that they float. So that no matter how, unless you, and I have done this, put them in a pot that's snug, where they will stand up just because they're snug, what you're going to end up with is a bald spot on the pears. They're hard to turn. It doesn't work. You have to find a pot where the pears will be comfortable, but not too comfortable, on their sides. You put them in the hot liquid, the wine, seasoned, and turn them every 10 minutes. Now, you only want to be the tiniest a bit simmering, really just bubbles coming to the top. And it's going to take about a half an hour, could even take 40 minutes until they're tender enough that you can get the point of a knife in the bottom without any trouble at all, meaning they're very tender.
And you have rotated
them regularly because you want them to be of even color and cook.
You keep turning them?
Yeah, about every 10 minutes for a half hour, so it's not that much. But
do
it is something you have to be prepared
them?
To tend the pot because you don't want them to boil either. You want to keep the liquid just barely simmering. That's what poaching is. These are worth the trouble. You know, the whole trouble is tending the pot. I mean, peeling, maybe you want to call peeling the pears a little
trouble. I thought that was called cooking.
But, yeah. So, I don't know.
I thought the trouble was called cooking. But
I agree. But, you know.
Yeah, no, I know.
I'm just saying that's the work involved here is peeling the pears and tending the pot.
And I know this sounds possibly foolish, but in this universe, Do you use tongs to churn them, or do you use
good question.
A knife?
No, great question, Jill. I use the wooden spoon to do it.
You might.
And it's not easy to do without bruising the pears. And if you bruise the pears as they're cooking, you're going to see it in the end. The bruised part will take the wine in a different way, and it'll be a obvious dark spot. So I'm very careful with turning the pears. I use a wooden spoon, even after I got one of them bruised a little bit. This is not for fancy. This is not for. By the way, in my cookbook, the Jewish Home Cooking, I had a laugh when I looked at it this morning. That's the ones made with kosher wine, Passover wine. But the photograph that we took right here in my apartment is with my grandmother's good china. The pear is presented in a bowl with some syrup. And then we even have an underplate on it. So it was meant to be fancy in this picture, but it's not a fancy thing after all. And then again, by the way, if you're not being kosher, you're not eating, or even if you are, but you're having it with a dairy meal, this is really good with whipped cream or ice cream.
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, but you know, you have to very. I wouldn't use tongs to turn these because it's going to bruise them.
No,
I use actually a very wide bowl. To prevent that. All right. I can. By the way, I'm gonna get off the air and I'm gonna eat one.
And eat one?
I'm gonna eat one of them.
Yeah, you're lucky. You have them. The rest of us are sort of.
Well, you have to make.
But I remember one of my mother's favorite. You know, it was like fast dessert.
Yeah.
She would take. No poaching, and we have anyway. She would take green grapes, and put basically, if we had creme fraiche, otherwise sour cream on the green grapes, and sprinkle with brown sugar.
That sounds very good.
And it was amazingly good, and you know, again.
I happen to have really good green grapes in the fridge right now.
Try it. It's one of those things that use sour cream, not creme fraiche. But it's one of those things that it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for the ingredients when you know them that it tastes the way that it tastes.
All right.
You can, you know.
The other thing, by the way, the other thing that I make a lot of and. Always, that again from my childhood, I love it. Baked apples. Only thing is, I cannot find. This is the second season in a row that I cannot find Rome apples, which are my preferred apple for baked apples. They're very large. They're not very good eating apples, but they're very good baking apples. They come out really creamy in the end. I don't know. They've disappeared.
Yeah.
You can bake any apple, of course. And what I do them all the same way. I have a nice makes. You core them. I peel off the top third of the peel. I rub the cut part in sugar, whatever sugar you have. I happen to have some nice Jamaican granulated brown sugar that I've been using. And then you put them in a baking dish. Put a little wine on the bottom of the baking dish. I've been using vermouth because I always have it an open bottle, and it makes a very because it's you know it's already infused with herbal flavors. Vermouth it makes for a very nice syrup. You put in I don't know not much a quarter of an inch or so of wine in the bottom of the dish, and that's it. Stick them in a 400-degree oven. It usually takes close to an hour. It depends on the apple, depends on the size of the apple. If you want to, you can baste them while you're cooking them. But the liquid, the wine, and with whatever sugar fell into the dish, makes a really good syrup to put on top of your apple.
And then, that sounds delicious. And all of those are fabulous. Are you an apple a crisp guy or a fruit cobbler guy?
I am, but. These days, I'm trying to avoid the crumb topping.
That was a revelation for me when I
which is mostly sugar.
Eat it.
I'm trying to keep my sugar to fruit.
Right. Okay.
And I didn't read this, but a friend just told me yesterday there was a story somewhere this week, I'll find it, on how fruit sugars are not as bad for you as sugars.
Right.
Meaning
fruit.
Yeah, refined sugar, of course. But I knew that all along because I
know, but you know,
I had a nutritionist tell me because I'm diabetic, I can never eat fruit. I'm sorry?
It's one of those diabetics. You know, I once suggested that my father eat a banana, and I got thrown out of the house.
Well, that's the worst fruit.
Well?
You know, it's like 35 grams of
well,
mostly
unless
sugar
you wait,
in
fruit
a banana.
Sugar is not, you know, it's actually not. Come to find out, but that's a whole other. That's another.
Well, anyway,
another
the
day.
Thing the thing about a fruit is, I was told many years ago when I first was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, I was told by a diabetic. She wasn't diabetic, but she was a nutritionist for diabetics. By the way, associated with NYU, so you would think she'd be reputable. But I didn't think she was reputable at all. I mean, I can count off at least a half a dozen reasons. But she told me I could never eat fruit again.
Mm.
So that was ridiculous. I couldn't believe that. And now, of course, 20 years later or whatever, we know that it's ridiculous. However, what other things you eat are important. Fiber is particularly important for a diabetic. And if you eat a heavy fiber meal, maybe even like vegetable or salad to start, with vinegar or lemon juice, at the end of your meal, you can have some sugary fruit, and it's okay. All right.
It's about balance.
Well, yeah, it is about balance, but I have to balance things away from carbohydrates. Still, I'm eating fruit, and I'm going to eat a poached pear. It'll be my treat for the day.
And I'm going to drool.
I'm going to try not to have more than a tablespoon or two of the syrup, and I'll be okay. And I already had my high-fiber meal this morning.
All right, so you're in good shape, and the rest of us will just have to catch up.
Okay, my friends, all of you,
have a fruitful
great
week.
Have a fruitful. I was trying to avoid the puns, but there are many there.
And thank you, as always, and we will talk to you next week. Love to Bob. This is
okay. Take care, everyone.
Arthur Schwartz, Food Maven, etc. on Robin Hood Radio.